Hello all, welcome to Hard to Say Goodbye. This is Sam.
This is DJ.
And we have a very, we have an announcement that we need to make.
No.
We've mentioned this on our Only Stupid Answers podcast and other live shows, but for the time being, Hard to Say Goodbye is going to be going on a little hiatus.
Yeah, so it's time to say goodbye to Hard to Say Goodbye, at least for now. We might be bringing it back once we know more about the next season of Game of Thrones, but we're doing a ton of exciting things over at twitch.tv/playnogam. We've got a live show on Wednesdays. We've got a Super TV Showdown on Thursdays. And then if you're part of patreon.com/onlystupidanswers on Fridays, you can watch us record our show live. So if you've enjoyed being a part of Hard to Say Goodbye and you haven't checked out our Only Stupid Answers Patreon, we highly recommend you go over there. But we're going to put up the last episode. If we haven't already, we're going to put up the last episodes we recorded of Hard to Say Goodbye over on Patreon, so you can listen to those there. But if you're a part of that Patreon, or if you've been listening to us here, we recommend you go over to patreon.com/onlystupidanswers, and we appreciate you supporting Hard to Say Goodbye while we were doing it.
And if you are part of the bridge tier on Only Stupid Answers, maybe hang out there for a second if you want to, because there's going to be some cool stuff coming there very soon, so keep your peepers peeled. But thank you again for everyone who has supported Trisha, DJ, and I as we try to exploring Game of Thrones one last time.
Yep.
As it fades off into the sunset. But we appreciate you guys. We love you. And guess what? We'll see you over on Only Stupid Answers.
So enjoy this episode of Hard to Say Goodbye. And you can go over, if you're already part of the Patreon, you can check out for the last ones. And then join us, like Sam said, for our main podcast, Only Stupid Answers. Thank you.
Hello. It's your old pal Sam here with another episode of Hard to Say Goodbye. It's your Game of Thrones rewatch show that's going to help you through one of the hardest times in your life when your favorite show ends. And joining us is Ms. Trisha Hershberger. Hello.
Hi, guys.
Thank you for joining us. And Mr. DJ Wooldridge.
Ooh, hello. I am also here.
Now we've made it finally to Season 2, Episode 1, The North Remembers. And as always, I will copy-paste a synopsis I find from IMDb without reading it. Here we go. Tyrion arrives to King's Landing with news that he will be acting as the King's Hand until his father returns. The news doesn't sit well with Cersei, King Joffrey's mother. Tyrion makes a point of telling her just how badly she has handled the situation of Ned Stark's execution and Arya Stark's escape. Rumors around abound that Cersei's children are the product of an incestuous relationship with her brother Jaime. Even King Joffrey has heard them and challenges his mother to tell the truth, but she denies it. I don't remember that happening. Yeah. Soon, the King's Guards are seeking out and killing all of late King Robert's illegitimate children.
Whoops.
One, Gendry, the armorer's apprentice, seems to have made his escape. In Winterfell, Bran continues to have dreams and is told that the red comet in the sky means only one thing, dragoons. Daenerys and her small group of followers are in seemingly endless desert. She sends riders in all directions to see what they can find. The Night's Watch has ventured beyond the wall and learned that the king, who lives north of the wall, is amassing an army. The dead King Robert's brother, Stannis Baratheon, prepares for war and sees all others as his enemies. Summer is coming to an end, and everyone is preparing for a winter of unknown duration. That was probably a better synopsis.
That was better.
Yeah.
The other one was missing letters. That could have been my copy-paste job or them. We'll find out.
Or them.
Can I talk about how cool the comet is and something that I didn't even remember happening at all? And as soon as, like, space things get added to fantasy stuff, I automatically get more invested for some reason. It's just like, oh, comet, that's gotta be something big. And that
just
being,
wait till they introduce laser swords in
I'm
season
so
8.
I'm so excited. But
it,
no,
it almost breaks my brain when that happens. I'm like when sci-fi gets introduced into fantasy like that, I'm like, what's happening?
I can't
focus.
Like time travel?
Uh-oh.
Gets confusing. But no, the comet being introduced and it being tied to Danny, I'm like, this is really cool. Yeah. I'm really on board with this. But coming right back to it, yeah, the ending of this episode, I know I'm jumping ahead, but the baby stuff that didn't sit
oopsie,
well.
Oopsie.
I tried to watch episodes 1 and 2 of season 2 back to back, and I was like, I'm going to sleep. That left a bad taste in my mouth. I don't want to watch more in case more babies get killed.
This also emphasizes how little control Cersei has over Joffrey or just generally the situation.
So,
does she now?
I mean, these two episodes definitely give me the impression that she's not quite in control of the situation as she seems to think she is.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm trying to think if it's this episode or the next episode. It must be the next episode then, where they talk about that the killing baby's order was maybe Cersei's order, not Joffrey's.
Oops. I understood that conversation differently.
Okay.
We'll have to talk about it when we get to it. But this episode does open up with Tyrion. He's showing up being Tyrion. He's having a great time.
Yeah.
Or at least pretending to. He's the new Hand of the King, which I think is amazing. And like, it's just cool rewatching it for me because I've only watched it once and I watched everything basically in the span of 2 weeks. So now everything still feels new.
Yeah.
And him being the Hand of the King is really cool. Also, this whole season starts out with Joffrey just being a little shit and like making that dude drink as much wine until he explodes or vomits up all of his guts.
Yeah, but Sansa is starting to learn the game a little bit better and starting to learn how to play Joffrey, which is cool.
And the Hound kind of does an assist a little bit.
Yeah, it's like interesting to see that Sansa's getting smarter little by little.
But it is very rewarding to see Tyrion kind of come in and start like shaking things up. We get a little bit of that this episode, next episode, even more, and it's great. And I kind of wish the show was like Harry Potter with the dark arts teachers, where each season was a different Hand of the King. and something miserable happens. Something miserable does happen most of them eventually.
It's nice to, it feels so, for all the crap that happens, it makes us feel bad, like the baby murder and Ned and all the crap. Then something happens where, like, Tyrion comes in and you feel like, oh, finally someone's gonna clean stuff up around here.
As soon as he...
We know that won't, but for the moment,
it's
a beautiful respite.
As soon as he mentions to Cersei, it's like, just so you know, you lost all of your, like, your gambling. You don't have nothing to gamble anymore because you lost two Starks. No. You have one more.
Yeah.
You don't know where the other one is, and the other one's up on a spike.
Yeah.
So,
some of Peter Dinklage's best acting is when he finds out that they don't have Arya.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, and you have the two Stark calls. She's like, one. You have one. What could possibly happen to the other one?
Mm-hmm.
One of my favorite scenes is in all of season one, we have a lot of people talking about how stern and grim and no fun Stannis is. And then you meet him and you find out, oh, they were so right. that is exemplified in when he's sending out the letter. I believe that's this episode, when he sends out the letter to let everybody else know that Joffrey is a bastard. And so they're like, and then Sir Jaime, call him the Kingslayer. Call him what he is.
And I like that.
Okay, and then they're like, Kingslayer, but call him Sir Jaime, because that's also, and it's like, that. Okay, that's who this guy is.
Mm-hmm.
He's a dick, but he's a very accurate dick.
Or
he takes out Beloved, my brother. I never had any lovers.
Exactly.
Or
it's a lie. It's a lie. It's a lie. Strike it out. Oh, jeez. All right, guys.
It was confusing. It felt like the guy who was like, yeah, let's take it to him. But let's see if we still get, like, it's like if you're mad at a professor, so you're passive aggressive in the email, but you still are like, please and thank you. It felt weird, and I like that it made it clear that Stannis is boring as hell. But we also meet the Lady in Red.
I mean, super boring, because he's like, move over, wifey. Have you seen this red lady?
I mean, she's red. She's got red hair.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, also the whole exchange with like the new gods and the old gods. With your old pal, the guy with the amazing mutton chops and those glasses that you have. And they got to see them for the first time.
To see them a mug as he tries to poison the red lady, and it does not work out for him. And the first implication we get that maybe there's something going on with the one true god.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe
there's something up there.
You get a mention of Lightbringer as well, which is really cool. The sword.
See Lightbringer.
Who are the people on the pyres? They're people.
Oh, it's the seven gods.
They're just wood. So Stannis has not done anything too shady yet. Don't worry, that'll change.
Sorry, I was looking in the background. I was like, oh, they might be already dead.
Those were the statues of the seven.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So they're burning the old gods.
Mm-hmm.
That's why Crescent's like, yo, hello, guys. Mm-hmm. Like, what the hell? You're just forsaking your old gods because she said so? Are you nuts?
Crescent's not wrong to say, hey, maybe we should dial it back with the Red Woman. However, he could have dialed it back with the poison, because that, again, it didn't work out well for
also
him.
Just
I'll give you some more fun background about Crescent in our bonus episode.
I also like this, the Game of Thrones tactic of like, hey, we're going to give you what seems like a bad guy, but we're going to have him work with somebody you're definitely going to like. So it's like, hey, here's Stannis, who's not going to be your favorite, but Davos.
Sir Davos, the Onion Knight.
You're immediately going to fall in love with, and I did.
Yep, because he's awesome. Yeah, I loved his intro. I loved how he dealt with Crescent and said, you know, when Crescent's like, you must tell him the truth. And Sir Davos is like, and what is that?
Yeah, exactly.
Your truth? I must tell him your truth? Because that's different.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, my favorite characters on these shows are good but pragmatic.
Mm-hmm.
They're a decent person, but they also know when to like hold them and know when to fold them, if you know what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm.
That's a lot of people's slogan in this world. A lot of our favorite characters.
It's the Lannister's words.
But also, I'm just reading through my notes of how we move through this episode. It's also the intro to everyone's favorite character, Caster.
Craster's Keep, and he's definitely in the incest is wincest category.
But what happens to the boy?
Find out in this episode. We find out next episode.
Yes, we do.
And it's not good.
No, it's
or
not.
Is it?
Spoiler alert. It's not great.
Find out.
Craster does a good job of immediately being very hateful. And this is another good showcase of, I really like Lord Commander Mormont. He's such a cool dude. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because he's like, look, I don't like this dude either.
Yeah.
But we needed to stop here for the intel he can provide.
Yeah, did you not hear me mention we passed through three other villages and there's nobody there?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and he gets it. He finds out that Mance Rayder's gathering an army of wildlings, which is what he came there for. He wants to know what's going on. You got to get the job done. He's like, fine, take our axe.
Also,
whatever.
That actor's name is Cosmo, which I think is great.
That is cool as well.
That is super cool.
And we get to meet Gilly. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
For the first time. We get more of her in the next episode, which is cool. And also, one of my favorite scenes is, because Cersei, you can see her kind of freak out when Tyrion's like, yeah, you lost Arya and you fucked up. But then later, you see Littlefinger try to pull some shit, and like, Cersei might not be as smart as Littlefinger.
Wait, is that in this one?
Yes, it is. It's because that's when he introduces that he made his own sigil, and it almost seems like,
oh yeah, because he's like, knowledge is power, and she's like, nah, bitch, power is power.
Yeah, it's a really cool scene. But also, when someone like making your own sigil seems like a kid who makes his own soccer team uniform when he doesn't get picked, and he's like, don't worry, he's on the purple dragon. It's like, which one's that one? It's not competing, but they're still equally as important, and I will have that known.
It's a very great Cersei scene of showing what she's capable of, but also it emphasizes that we know where Joffrey got it from, because it's like, you're not wrong, because you could have killed Littlefinger there, but
it wouldn't have been smart.
Exactly, you're not as in control. You're petty, and you throw tantrums, and you're dangerous because you have all this power. But like Joffrey, you're like a kid with a cannon. It's like, you're dangerous, but that doesn't mean you're as in control as you think you are.
Yeah.
It's just you have a lot of capabilities.
Well, and it's
and
like
kind of Cersei's MO of the whole series.
Yeah, she came at him threatening him.
Yeah.
So he, I feel like, tried to calm it down by saying, hey, man, we're not all perfect. I know some stuff about you, too. Yeah. And then it just escalated.
Oh, yeah. I thought he was being petty as well. I didn't find him calming. I thought he was trying to be like, hey, you're queen, but also I am important too, and she's like, just so you know, you're not.
Also, if you think about the way
that's how I interpret it, doesn't mean it's right, but that's what I got.
Yeah, I thought she was like, hey, we all know you're in love with Catelyn, so you probably hid Arya.
Yeah.
And then he was like, we all know something about who you're in love with too. Like, don't come at me, biatch.
Also, knowing what happens in future episodes, perhaps threatening Littlefinger so directly does not work out well for Cersei's family.
Wait, we'll have to find out. You know, maybe it'll be
who
great.
Knows?
We also get a couple things dealing with the King of the North.
Mm-hmm.
Lovely Robb Stark. Mm-hmm. He threatens Jaime, which I feel like it's worth pointing out that I have trouble understanding why the dragons usually look so cool in the show, and they've always struggled with the dire wolves.
Oh, you didn't think they look cool?
It's just they move. It's clearly we're real wolves. They've kind of enlarged, but they always move kind of weird. Is that just me?
It doesn't bug me.
Listen, I'll just let it be me because I love the dire wolf. So I'm fine with that. But also,
I mean, I think they just look weird because we're not used to seeing horse-sized wolves.
Yeah.
Like, that's just weird.
This was the episode where you have Rob and Jamie and the threatening the banter back and forth.
Banter back and forth with Jamie, but also you have, I'm blanking so hard, Greyjoy, Theon. Comes to Rob with, like, hey, a suggestion that maybe. This is a great example of something I love in this show of, like, when, because Rob explains his plan to Catelyn, like, hey, we need ships. Greyjoy has ships. All right, we need to team up with somebody. We need to team up with Renly and his people because fuck Stannis. And you're like, you know what? That's actually a really good plan, and it's still wrong. He's still wrong about all the. Ends up being the wrong decisions. But based on the information he has at the time, that's actually a really solid plan.
And Catelyn again being like, "Yo, when I tell you not to trust somebody, you should probably not trust that person."
Yes.
Experience. There is some wisdom in experience.
Yeah.
There.
Speaking of wisdom, not really. I just needed a segue. Yeah. Okay. But you do get another example of, because we mentioned Rickon having the sight, but you get a visual example of the Stark kids being connected with their direwolves with the dream that Bran has, where he sees through his direwolf.
Yeah, he wargs into his direwolf. Yeah, Bran is the only one that the series really holds on to that with, I feel like.
Which is, I mean, I get it. Like, that if you want to kind of differentiate a little bit, but that is pretty cool. And that's where you get him and his caretaker. Her name is...
Asha.
Thank you so much. Sorry, I can't.
Tongues.
You could have actually, you could have said anything. I'd be like, thank you.
Asha.
Yeah.
Asha.
Mm-hmm. But you all, that's when she mentions that this is usually a sign the dragons are coming. And it's just kind of, it was a cool moment for me where I actually legitimately got excited watching the show. I was like, this is... I'm on board with it.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of dragons, things are not going so hot for Dany.
No, poor Daenerys.
After that great triumphant, hey, I have dragons now, you're like, oh shit, and then you realize, but you're still in the middle of nowhere.
And the people some of these people did actually follow her. Yeah. And now I love the moment where she says to Jorah, like, I promised I would make their enemies scream. How do I make starvation scream?
Great line.
Great line. And also great character moment for Jorah when he's like, I haven't figured that one out yet.
Mm.
It's such a like, wow, they're really in deep
crap. They're
really
in trouble. And this is the beginning of what I think is Dany's weakest storyline on the show.
Season two.
I know. I'm not a fan of her season two arc.
Okay.
Personally. She got dragons now.
She does. And they do cool things.
They do cool things.
I'm interested as we continue with the rewatch of this season to hear your thoughts on that, DJ.
Actually, okay, I have a question about the scene between Joffrey and Cersei. And it's like, you think Joffrey's going to mention that Uncle Jaime's Papa Jaime. but he doesn't. He mentions Robert having illegitimate children.
Well, no, he does. He says, I heard a gross rumor about you and Uncle Jaime.
Oh, okay. Thank you for clarifying, because then... It makes it seem like, because I wasn't remembering that he said that first.
Yeah.
It made it seem like it was one of those fake outs where he mentions it just to taunt. No. I thought it was a fake out from the writers to be like, he only has heard the rumor about the illegitimate children.
No.
Okay. So that just because I forgot that, I guess, through the watch through.
Yeah, he says, I heard a gross rumor about you and Uncle Jaime. And then she says, our enemies will make up whatever they can to, you know, challenge your claim to the throne.
Gotcha. And
so
that's,
she just dismisses it.
There we go. But then he mentions the illegitimate children.
And everything works out fine for the illegitimate children.
They all get sent away to the farm and everything's okay.
The farm state.
Are we led to believe that those are all his illegitimate children?
Yes.
Or that they go for real? So,
I would imagine,
not surprising, but they went after just children with dark hair.
Yeah, I would imagine it's every confirmed illegitimate child plus some extras that they suspected. So there was probably definitely 100% some kids that had no relation to Robert that are definitely dead now.
Couldn't have been just Gendry.
I don't think it was just kids with dark hair, though.
No.
I think
that would have been
most
of King's Landing,
because wasn't it something like any illegitimate children that Robert fathered, he sent money to? Like, that was like his one like honorable thing is like, if they had his kids, he at least made sure they were financially taken care of. So there was some kind of a record. And when John Arryn got in trouble, it's when he was starting to go visit all of those children.
Yep.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. All right. So and that was established. Because it took Ned a minute to figure out that there was even any illegitimate children.
Yeah, so that was established when Ned started, when Peter was like, let me show you what John Arryn was up to.
Gotcha. That's
when And then
when
Ned
that.
Was like, ooh, what was he up to? Oh, visiting Robert's bastards. Yeah. I wonder why.
Oh, very cool. Okay.
The seed is strong.
You know, seed, what
and
a great
then,
word.
Yeah, and then they end with a shot of Arya off with the The Night's Watch, and it's just, she's going to make it safely to the wall, and it's going to be okay.
Well, because I think that shot isn't even supposed to be of Arya. It's showing us Gendry. We're ending on Gendry being the last of Robert's bastards to survive, which, in my opinion, is a bit of a red herring. Like, why are the show writers placing such importance on Gendry?
I think I always perceive that as Gendry is the transition point from that scene where they're talking about bastards to remind us where Arya is.
Okay, maybe. Because, I see it as like, oh, all of the bastards are dead except for Gendry, remaining. And I'm like,
I think Gendry's going to factor into the end game.
Well, You know what? I'll save it for the book to show.
Boom.
I'll save it. I'm saving it for the book to show. Boom. I have things to say about Gendry and his plotline.
I'm excited to talk about that. Any final thoughts on this episode?
No.
hold on. Let me just go and make sure that I got everything I wanted to talk about. We talked about the comet.
I think we did a pretty good job hitting every note. Yeah, I just want to make sure it's clear that the baby dying made me upset. I got upset.
That's probably a good thing. I mean, didn't make you upset. That'd be a problem.
And I watched this originally before I was a mama. Mm-hmm. And then I rewatched it again after I was a mama. And it was so much worse.
Okay.
Interesting.
It's the same way I feel right now about children being hurt or children death in video games, which is like suddenly very in fashion in video games.
It's super cool now.
It's an easy way to like tug at emotional heartstrings. But I feel like when you don't have kids, you're like, oh man, this person hurt a kid. They're horrible. And when you do have kids, you're like, oh my God, a baby got hurt. My life is ruined. What do I do? You start like running around your living room. Like it's a completely different.
I'm going to throw this out there. I don't think Trisha should watch Hereditary. Anyway.
Thank you. I will not watch that.
There you go.
I would recommend you don't.
You asked for movie recommendations earlier. That's not one of them.
Yeah. Well, don't you guys remember way back in the day? I'm going to throw it back to Joe Beretta whenever we were like, hey, you should watch this. Mm-hmm. And he was like, does it have child death in it? Because my wife won't watch it if it does. Mm-hmm. Like that was his question about any new show.
Yeah.
I get it now.
That's a fair question.
I get it now.
Joe should also not watch Hereditary.
He's not missing much. It's a good movie. Oh,
it's a fantastic movie.
It is, but no. Yeah. But anyways, you can check out an episode on that over at Only Stupid Answers. But for more info on us, you can check out Trisha on Twitter.
Trisha on Twitter. At That Girl Trish.
There you go, DJ.
I'm at DJ Talks Trash, every place that matters. JMR 1022 says Gendry seemed overhyped to me, in my opinion.
Do you agree with that? Let me know on Twitter at Sam Basher. But until then, check out our Patreon. We'll see you guys next time. Bye-bye.
Bye. Bye.